If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, equal housing lender, MLS 112-4061.
Chicago trial attorney Karen Conti joins us now with legal briefs. Karen, good morning. Let's talk first about the Supreme Court's decision to allow President Trump to resume cuts at the Department of Education. What was the basis for the court's opinion?
Well, that's the key here, because there was no basis. The court issued an opinion with no opinion, basically just upholding his cuts. There was dissent from the liberal justices, but we don't really know what they considered and what they ruled upon. So all we know is that the cuts that Trump made are valid, and they'll probably still be continued to be debated. But from the standpoint of the Supreme Court, he was able to do that.
The argument here centered around whether this was constitutional or not. Is that right?
Right. And so there's all kinds of rules about this. When the Congress creates an agency like the Department of Education, only the Congress can get rid of it. So the argument was that because he made so many cuts with his executive order, that it was basically disbanding the department, and you can't do that. So that was the one argument. The other argument is there's all kinds of acts, the Impoundment Control Act, Administrative Procedure Act. These are all acts that limit what a president can do, and even what the Congress can do when it comes to funding and budget cuts and the like. So there were all those arguments that those things were violated, and frankly, it was a pretty close call in my view that might have been a violation. But the Supreme Court didn't want to put an opinion on a paper, but they upheld it.
And as a practical matter, what will this mean as far as educational decision making?
Well, I hope it doesn't mean much, but I have a feeling it's going to mean a lot. And, you know, what the department does from a national basis, they don't do policies. They don't put in curriculums in schools. That's not what they do. What they do is they protect student rights for special needs, for instance, civil rights, discrimination. They oversee student loans. So they kind of do a bigger picture, not the niceties of education, but the bigger national picture. And so all of those issues are probably going to suffer. They're understaffed already, and now with the cuts, there's just going to be a real lack of ability to do their job on a national basis.
A lot of focus on the Justice Department right now. A PBS Frontline documentary last night got into this. They've lost two-thirds of their staff. Is this just what happens during any administration change, Karen?
No, and I hear people say that. It's just not true. And I have friends who work for the DOJ. These are people who go into government service. They make less money than they would in a firm because they believe in our system and they believe in upholding the Constitution. And generally speaking, even though those lawyers may have really strong political views, they survive throughout all of the different administrations, whether it's Bush, or the like. So they uphold the law. That's what they do. Whether it's coming down on the side of the Democratic type of thing or a Republican thing. But I think what we're seeing here is because there's been so many challenges with the laws and, you know, Trump's very bold executive orders, that they're overworked, number one, because they're so busy scrambling to defend all of these actions. Number two, I think a lot of them have said that we can't defend some of these things, and we're not going to stretch the truth and the facts. Several of these lawyers were interviewed, and they said, you know what, we have ethical obligations. We're not going to lose our law licenses by making arguments that are not constitutionally based or factually based. So I think that adds to it as well.
So if the Department of Justice is asking a lawyer to uphold a directive that he or she believes is unconstitutional, what is the lawyer's obligation at that point?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, you really do have to advocate for your client, whether you believe in it or not. And, you know, we do this all the time as lawyers. But where the line gets crossed is, do I miscite a precedent? Do I miscite a statute? Do I change the facts to make it look like a better case? And those are things I can't do. Right. Mm-hmm. I can defend things that I don't believe in. And I am obligated to do that. But I can't do something that's unethical and dishonest. And if I do that, I lose my license. And it's not Donald Trump who loses his license, it's me.
Right.
So these lawyers are very aware that their law license is worth more than the job.
Well, and the lawyers are supposed to be working not for the president, but for the country, for all of us.
Well, that's right. I think there has been a sea change with Donald Trump because he's made it clear that the Department of Justice is going to do his bidding. And
yeah.
So that also has changed the culture there, which probably has not sat right with many of the lawyers there who, you know, they're there to do justice. They really mm-hmm. are. And whether I agree with what they have done in the past or not, they're usually good lawyers who are pretty solid ethical beings.
And quickly, Karen, what's your take on the lawsuit against Tesla over this auto driver accident in Florida? If the vehicle malfunctions, who's liable?
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it's, you know, Tesla's going to be on the hook for sure, the manufacturer, the designer, maybe even the software manufacturer or designer, and, you know, anyone who maintained the car. And certainly the driver is going to be liable, too, because, you know, even though you have a self-driving car, you still have the ability to grab the wheel at some point or hit the brake. So I think all of those entities are going to be liable, and we don't have laws in Illinois yet because we do not have self-driving cars yet. But I think all of these laws need to be revamped.
Yeah, they're coming. To be continued, Karen Conti, Sunday, 3 to 5 p.m. on WGN Radio. Thank you, Karen.
Have a good one.
You too.